On this week's episode, we're going to be discussing AR glasses. For those who aren't as geeky as us, that's augmented reality, not VR glasses, which is virtual reality. We're going to ask the question.
Or ER glasses, which is, never mind.
What? What's, is that ethereal reality?
No, it's emergency reality.
But. Well, we're going to ask the question, whichever acronym you want, would you wear them? And what if you're saying no, absolutely not. What if they were Linux-based? Would that change your opinion on it? Plus, we've got a new pie to discuss. And this one's not raspberry flavored, unfortunately. Or maybe fortunately. We'll get into it. We'll let you know.
Depends on your preference of flavors.
Episode number 367 of Destination Linux, your favorite video podcast. My name is Ryan.
I'm Michael.
And I'm Jill.
Now let's get this show on the road toward Destination Linux. Our community feedback this week comes from Cyprian. I think that's how you pronounce it. We're going to go with that. Now, Cyprian's email was great, but it was really, really long. So what I did is I retyped all the main points out manually of the entire
email. That's definitely not what you did. What did you do?
I put it in AI. And then I had AI tell me to summarize it. It's not that I didn't read it, but I need to summarize it for the show. I want to make that clear. I need to summarize it.
Because we can't say the whole thing if it's too long. So we're just going to get the main points.
Because it'd be basically like reading a book. Like it would be story time with Ryan. And that's
story time.
Probably not going to be that popular.
No, I don't think anybody wants to have story time with Ryan. No.
Maybe. Let us know in the comments if you want story time with Ryan and we'll add it as a podcast out there.
Aww, story time with Ryan. I'm sure your kids love that, Ryan.
They do,
Not even as kids, no. I
could not even as kids. All right. Cyprian's main points here in the email, he was discussing the whole XZ hack. We got a lot of great feedback. A lot of people really interested in what happened there. Mentions that it was sophisticated, well-planned, that the researchers were struggling to reverse engineer this entire attack. And Cyprian is concerned about the potential trial runs of the hack and other projects and wonders if there's other hidden backdoors and older versions of libraries. And also mentioned several things like the disappearance of some GitHub contributors being really suspicious and the urgency to push the hack code, wondering if it could be linked to the elections out there. But Cyprian also had a bunch of questions in here, like, did the hackers test their attack in other projects before XZ, which was interesting. I didn't think about that one. It's possible, but I believe that if we look at this whole thing, a lot of this was more based on a social hack targeting a very specific person.
Like there is definitely some level of skill in the code because they were able to hide it so well, but there's also the majority of what was successful was the social engineering part of it. So the question of, did they test it based on the account information? No, but they could have made other accounts for the same thing. So possible. Yeah. But I think the better question is earlier in the feedback, it says about like, is other projects affected by this? And I would say that probably.
Yeah. And then they asked finally, what role did AI play in this? So really good questions. First of all, I think it's great that we take time in the community to evaluate the possibilities because that's the only way you're going to figure out mitigations in the future of what might have occurred here. And I think as time goes on, that story is going to become more and more clear probably, or maybe not. Sometimes they don't, but a lot of times we get little bits and pieces of information over time that we start finding out more about these things as time goes on. I'm not sure AI would be needed to pull this one off in its complexity, to answer your last question again. I think the genius in this was the social engineering aspects, much more than the coding aspects, because the code told on itself. Because it was difficult to find, but it told on itself in its resource usage and things. In open source, we have a trust and verify model, trust but verify. And we trust authors that have shown merit to be able to release open source code. And that's what happens in most cases, 99.999% of them perfectly. And then you have these situations like this, which I think is more of a social engineering accomplishment than anything else where...
You could say it's kind of like a combination of both because they did contribute code that was legit before they became bad actors. So they were testing the code or like trust but verify and they verified it was good. And then all of a sudden they're like, okay, now they have power and now they're not good anymore. Like there are debates about whether or not this has happened before or happens again, or is this that something can it be deployed elsewhere? And it's a very interesting topic because of the fact that the answer is a little dystopian of probably, and it's likely that it's happened, that people are going to try this now that they know that this kind of thing works. So it's more important that people are vigilant to not accept contributions from people they don't have like confirmation of, like, multiple times and for a long period of time and that sort of thing. But even this wouldn't solve this one, because this one was also done over the course of like 2 years. So they were patient with it, except towards the end, they started becoming less patient and starting trying to rush people. And it was interesting because Systemd had a merge request that would have effectively broken this back door. So eventually it wouldn't have actually been a problem because Systemd was already working on something, and they started working on that like a month ago, or like a month prior to the thing happening. So it seems like there was like a last ditch effort to try to force it through so that it could be used, you know, in some ways. But
that may mean that they had thought they had lots of time. Maybe they found out that Systemd was going to patch it, and that's why. That's interesting.
Yeah.
So there was this documentary I ended up watching this week called Zero Days, and it's a really great documentary if you get a chance to watch it. And it's about the Stuxnet virus that infiltrated Iran's nuclear facility and caused physical damage. And they're calling this kind of the new warfare, right? Because before, hacks and stuff could break software but not actually hurt people. In this case, of course, this particular virus had the capability of causing physical damage and potentially hurting people. So a couple of things that's interesting about this virus is, number one, that it was all proprietary systems and proprietary hardware. There's specific modules that were used. They're all proprietary, all locked down. And this code was still able to get in there and, of course, spread throughout without anybody noticing. So again, in my opinion, open source worked in this case. That doesn't mean we don't need to take mitigations and make sure that trust but verify is a very important thing, even if an author is somebody we've trusted for years that we're still going through and having people look through the code and verify it. But whether it's proprietary or open source, these same things happen even in a very small situation, like a very specific module where code is written specifically for this module that's all proprietary. This virus was able to get in there and be weaponized in ways that people couldn't imagine that before that hack happening. And they kind of call it warfare 3.0 coming out. But what's also interesting to what you said, Michael, about this documentary is nobody knew, even after it was exploding these reactors, that there was a virus. It wasn't until, according to the documentary, that another government got involved and decided that they wanted it to be more aggressive in how it's spreading. So they changed the code to make it more aggressive. And when they did that, at that point, it was found that this virus existed. Had they left it in its slow migration, because this is a code, by the way, that was getting over zero or, you know, gapped servers. So they weren't connected to a physical internet.
Oh, wow.
Which is quite impressive. So even if you think, hey, I'll just disconnect off the internet and nothing could get my machine, you're wrong. And this is perfect proof of that. But it's interesting that it was that excitement of pushing it that got caught, and kind of similar in this way, little similarities there in that when the person started pushing, let's get this in really quickly, that raised suspicions. And that in itself is something I think we should be very leery of, if somebody's like, no, I need my code in right now. It's really important right now.
Like, also, it's maybe probably a
first warning sign that something's gone awry.
That's a good point too. And also, like, most people in this kind of situation are not very patient. And I think that, and also things, there's so many different pieces. One of the worst things is also the best things, is one of the best things about Linux and open source software, is that there are so many different pieces that go in and out of it that it's very difficult to, you know, kind of keep all of that under like control. So this person seemed to be going faster because of something that was happening in Systemd, which is a completely separate project, which had zero input from them. And that was, you know, something that's just one instance. And you could say, like, the fact that open source has so many different dependencies, that could be a problem because someone could just get inside of one project and affect a bunch of other stuff. But also, in this case, they could have accidentally affected the attacker at the same time too. So there's like an element of like a double-edged sword sort of thing for them. So I think it's interesting because open source is everywhere. It is rampant in the sense of like most of the world is powered by open source. So like open source software or the open source internet is basically like just the internet now. So it's a big issue, but it's also something that is going to take a lot of time and a lot of people to figure out the solution if there is one. But the big takeaway from this is open source is open, so there could be a solution versus this being a proprietary software where there is no chance for anyone to do anything about it because outside they wouldn't be able to test it.
Right.
Yeah. It, outside of the company. But at the same time, this was found by someone completely separate from the project, just from a random occurrence, then digging into the thing that you wouldn't be able to do if it was just outside of the company sort of thing. And people would say, well, that's okay because, you know, everybody's in the company you trust. And like, sure. You there's no way you've ever made a bad hire. You know, no company's made bad hires or anything. So yeah, I would say that
it's never happened.
Yeah, it never happened.
Now companies require like 13 interviews, I'm hearing. So how could you have a bad hire after 13 interviews?
Exactly.
Jill, what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, so one of the big differences here is that the XE virus, you know, is infiltrated by the internet. So instantaneously, Stuxnet was actually carried out from flash drive to server, from flash drive to server. So it was one of the original well-known SneakerNet viruses.
Yeah, and no, that's a really good point because that's how they got over the gapped server. Yes, but
exactly.
The important part about that is to get onto those drives and get it there, what they did is they infiltrated the manufacturer of the parts that made the module. Right.
Yeah.
And they put the virus in all their systems. So every time those people would put their USB drive in any of their own systems, it was infected. So that when they went to go do maintenance over in the Iran facilities and plugged in their thumb drive, it infected it. And that's how they got over the air gap. And that was quite an amazing story. Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. That's awesome. So this is an awesome email. Cyprian, thank you for sending it. And also, I loved all of your points in there, and I know we had to summarize it here, but it was really well thought out. And I think we need a lot of people like you thinking about this type of stuff and all of the variations of these type of attacks, because this isn't the last time, to Michael's point, that this is going to happen. In fact, it'll probably get more complicated, more complex, and there's a very big possibility a foreign government or other institution would be very interested in getting backdoors into Linux because, well, it powers everything. And so obviously, we have to be thinking about this type of stuff more and more.
And we also need to come up with ways to help fund the different critical pieces. Like, not every piece of open source software is critical, but we know what is critical. For example, we knew that this sort of thing was everywhere. LZMA was everywhere. And we also know that, like, the NTP for the network protocol for time, we know that that was everywhere. And there was an issue a long time ago where there was not a hacking thing, but it was like a burnout issue and stuff like that. There are many different types of projects that we know for a fact are critical, and we need to figure out some way to make them sustainable, because one person, the whole XKCD joke about the entirety of infrastructure of the world depends on this one person who is working on it in their free time on a small little thing that's holding up everything else. Yeah, we should make sure that it's not that situation anymore. Open source is awesome, but you know, it's not perfect. And that's an example of where companies have taken advantage of that. And we need to figure out some way to, whatever that might be.
Hold their feet to the fire.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
However that's possible.
Whatever that means, we're going
to
do that.
But thank you for the email and the feedback. And now we have another piece of email that I wanted to bring in. It's like a surprise. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't have any way to prove that this is real. It's probably not. Just so you know. I just wanted to put that as a preface, but we have a piece of a feedback that was supposedly sent by Andres Frowned, saying to Ryan, of course you can become a member of our open source society. If you manage to successfully complete the new member ritual, We welcome you to join us at our next secret member meeting.
What's the ritual? Did it say what the ritual
it
was?
It does not say what the ritual
Please
was.
Please tell me it's like bench press, because I got this. I could outbench every single person guaranteed in that organization.
It's probably not that.
Darn. Okay. It's probably a coding challenge.
That would be really cool. If that's true, then you might be able to get into the society. And if it's a fake person, which it probably is, just mess with you or whatever. And that's fun.
Well, listen, send me the steps to get into your cult. I mean, society. And I'm down. I'm totally down to join whatever it is. As long as it's, you know, semi-legal. It doesn't have to be fully legal, just semi-legal.
Just if it's mostly legal.
If it's mostly legal.
If there's like a gray area, then it's okay.
Yeah. I'm down. I'm down for whatever your ritual is, especially if it's like fighting or benching or something like that. I got this.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
send your feedback to destinationlinux.net/comments. We'd love to hear from you, and you become part of the show. Help make this show just like Cyprian did here. Awesome questions, awesome thoughts that made us think about a lot of things ourselves and how we can mitigate these type of attacks. So again, destinationlinux.net/comments. Send them.
Hey, Ryan, what do you call an endpoint security product that works perfectly but makes users miserable?
Let me think about that. I've heard of this one before. That's a failure, Michael.
That's a failure. You're right. Exactly. The old approach to endpoint security is to lock down employee devices and roll out changes through forced restarts, but that just doesn't work. The IT department is miserable because they've got a mountain of support tickets. Employees start using personal devices just to get their work done, and executives opt out the first time that makes them late for a meeting or something like that. You can't have a successful security implementation unless you work with end users, and that's where Collide comes in. Their user-first device trust solution notifies users as soon as it detects an issue on their device. And more importantly, it teaches them how to solve it themselves without needing help from IT. That way, untrusted devices are blocked from authenticating, but the users don't stay blocked. Collide is designed for companies with Okta, and it works on Linux, macOS, and Windows, as well as mobile devices. So if you have Okta and you're looking for a device trust solution that respects your team, visit destinationlinux.net/collide to watch a demo and see how it works. That's destinationlinux.net/KOLIDE.
You know, this is really interesting because I've been a part of many security rollouts that have had this exact situation described here happen, where the second, like, it'll roll out to users, they're miserable, but the second it impacts an executive,
that's when we change everything.
The whole thing gets rolled back, and now we're less secure than we were before because they don't really, these products don't really respect, you know, the entire implementation of what people have to do to get them set up and started and used. And so this is awesome. I would take something like Collide, go to my business and be like, hey, we need something like this that respects end users, that we have security, but it's security that people can use without getting completely frustrated and not being able to do their job, because that's doesn't really help either if you can't do your job, but it's secure.
Yeah. Yeah. Balancing security and usability is a very important thing. And it's awesome that Collide makes that possible.
By the way, Michael, we have a example of this with a bank. We won't name them, but they're so secure that we can't even get into our bank anymore.
Exactly.
And we are so
frustrated. Don't have to worry about people getting into our money because we can't.
We're changing banks. That's how frustrating their super secure system is. So that shows you the importance of not only your internal employees having good security, but what you're doing for your external customers as well. You want the security without the frustration. Check out Collide. Check out Collide.
DestinationLinux.net/Collide.
So Google Glasses. Do you remember when these came out, Jill?
And yes.
I wanted
that. That was exciting, him jumping out of the plane to demonstrate them.
I don't even remember the commercial. I just remember them existing, and I wanted them. I was like, oh, this looks awesome. I remember looking them up and then seeing the price and then going, well, not so awesome after.
So, the price was like, I don't know if people who remember, it was like $2,300 or something like that. And the price was not great. And when you said they look awesome, I would have to disagree with you there. They look ridiculous. They look like a cool thing to have. Like, oh, that'd be really cool. But also, they looked stupid.
No, yeah. I think they looked great, man. Like, I would rock them. Okay, I would make them look good. They may look stupid on you, but I'd make them look good.
We need to find a broken pair that only costs $10 because it doesn't work anymore.
We don't have any more than
$10. Let Ryan wear it for a bit and see how ridiculous he looks.
If somebody out there has a broken pair of Google glasses or even a working one, even better, send them to me. I'll wear them on the show every time.
And we're going to be at Red Hat Summit. If anybody's going to be at Red Hat Summit who has one, but feel free to bring it to let Ryan see how ridiculous he looks in it.
I can't believe this technology died off because I thought this was really going to be, I mean, not decades later, but like right around the corner after 2013, after Google introduced this, that we were going to start seeing a lot of companies start producing.
I mean, we saw people trying.
Yeah,
but they're all terrible attempts. Like companies like Ray-Ban and others have created ones, but they're just cameras.
What about Snapchat? Wasn't that the best?
With the vending machine? Yeah. Now, I'll give them this.
Ridiculous.
I loved the idea of, well, the first time I saw a vending machine in the mall that you could buy, I think at the time it was like iPods.
Yeah,
Not iPads, but like iPods and things, a Zoom player. And so you could see how old I am. And they had all this in a vending machine in the mall. I was like, I don't need any of this, but I've got to have a vending machine vend me an iPod. It was just dope. So they were onto something with the vending machine, just the glasses were crap, you know?
Well, also they put the vending machines in the worst possible places and there was only like a dozen of them. So people, and it was the only way to get the stuff. At least with the iPod thing, you'd be like, oh, I still buy it somewhere else. But with the Snapchat, it was like the only option. And there were actually videos of people going to a beach because for some reason they put a vending machine in the beach so you could get your glasses. Okay, sure.
You know, I think we're way behind Snapchat in the U.S. with the vending machines, though, because like if you watch videos of Japan, they vend everything. They have everything you can get through a vending machine. And this, to me, is superior than having to go into a store and deal with clerks and everything.
Yeah,
You're talking about talking to people.
Yeah, it's way better than talking to people.
Well, one of the things I wanted to say about Google Glass is it was introduced at Google I.O. And I was watching it that year. And one of the CEOs demonstrated it by literally getting launched out of a plane and falling during the
skydiving?
Conference. Yeah, skydiving. Oh, wow. It was really impressive, and it was.
It's more impressive that they stayed on his face.
Yeah. Yes.
You know.
What if he held them and he jumped? We gotta find that footage. Or maybe a band. Yeah, I guess that would.
But yeah, it was. You know, it was such a big. You know, an exciting thing because this is the future. And to me personally, I've always looked at it as a development device. And that's what it ended up being. You know, Google wanted to introduce this technology to the world and have others, you know, progressively improve it as an
insult, as an insult to anyone who wore glasses, because it was basically glasses that had like a rim and the nose thing and everything. But if you actually wore glasses, you couldn't use it because then they would be sitting on top of your glasses and it would have this weird effect.
Yeah,
and they never, I don't know if they ever did, but I don't think they ever made one that would fit with glasses. And I was
disappointed. Sure, they thought of that.
I know Leah Laporte had one.
They probably had it so you could put prescription lenses in there.
Yeah. No, look, they did. Yeah.
Here's the thing. I think this technology is extremely useful. Let me give you some.
Hold on. Before we go into that, let's talk about the fact that prescription glasses are also incredibly expensive. And you add that on top of the Google Glass, you're probably like $5,000.
Literally,
Well, you're still cheaper than Apple's VR headset.
That's
or coaster wheels for the Apple server computer.
Yeah. Or the monitor arm. The monitor arm.
Yeah.
So Meta is looking to take its learnings from its successful Meta Quest VR, which a lot of people were doubting the success of this device. But if you have kids and you're around last Christmas, this was the device every kid wanted and had to have, was the Meta Quest VR. To my surprise. Is Meta Quest
the same thing as the Oculus or whatever? Quest?
Yes, I think it was based off the Oculus Quest kind of design, but it's now the Meta Quest, Michael. Naturally. Keep up with the times.
Please. Naturally.
Yeah.
So I have a real quick question about the Meta Quest and about the AR and other, like they're theoretically implementing some of the stuff and technology from the Meta Quest into the whatever this is. And I was wondering, is it going to be involving the metaverse or the metaverse?
There's a dad joke. We have to have at least one.
We had to have it in there. MetaQuest VR, you know, I think became even more popular in people's minds too when Apple released their VR headset for, I don't know, what is it, $2,000 or $3,000 or some stupid thing. Because people were like, dang, you know, suddenly that $300-$400 for a MetaQuest doesn't look so bad and it can kind of do the same things and all of that. But what they're looking to do is take all of the stuff they've learned in VR and apply that to augmented reality. And there isn't much known about the glasses yet outside of, we know they're working on them and they plan to incorporate their AI capabilities they've been developing into these glasses. But it made me start thinking about some of the applications of AR and would I wear these things? Because first of all, MetaQuest did a really smart thing. When their VR wasn't selling, they decided to decouple Facebook from MetaQuest. So you no longer had to have a Facebook account to get on a MetaQuest. And I do believe that had a big part in their sales increase
100%
for MetaQuest.
A lot of people did not want Facebook. First of all, people don't want Facebook accounts anymore anyway. And secondly, when they have to use a Facebook account in order to use a device, that is not going to work. And it's good that they realized that it was a stupid idea, but it also is not surprising that Meta would do something like that. And I would say that they probably learned their mistake from, they learned their lesson from that, but will still try to attempt it on the glasses anyway.
No, you're wrong. It'll just be that other, what's the other one they own? Instagram. You have to have an Instagram account.
So, people will probably be okay with that one.
You have to have a Threads account.
A Threads account.
Nobody uses it.
Specifically Threads, yeah.
Yeah. So here's some of the applications. Before you're like, I would never put these on, blah, blah, blah. Let me paint some opportunities here of what
you're going to have story time with Ryan.
There we go. Story time with Ryan. Imagine being at work and you have immediate access to AI to help you with coding, word suggestions, and ideas to rewrite emails to your boss as you're staring at your screen. So it could be like, hey, don't tell your boss they're a dummy. That's probably not a good idea. Instead, say they have learning challenges. I don't know, something like that, right? It'll help you rewrite the email into something that
probably also difficult. Would not be a great thing.
Yeah, you probably wouldn't want to use either of those. But you get my point, right? You've got AI that's kind of feeding you real-time information. Mm. You can cheat easier on college tests because
you got it's me
built
there.
Into your glasses.
Very good, Ryan.
So, cheating on tests. Got it.
That to me was like a big one. I'm like, man, imagine how many certifications I could pass if I have all the answers right.
And imagine how many people will see those glasses and say, take those off.
But they're my prescription. I can't. Then I can't see. That's unfair. See? I've got some.
Okay. Yeah. You don't wear glasses, but that's a good one for people who do though.
Yeah. There you go. Get recommendations on the best restaurants and things nearby. So you're walking with your friend,
like a phone.
Jill, me and Michael, we're walking around in Pasadena, California after scale and like, hey, we need a restaurant that's nearby. That's, you know, Michael's very bougie. It's got to be 5 stars and up. So
give me some definitely recommendations. Not that. You know? Hotel needs to be really bougie. Yes, absolutely. Not the restaurant could be like a 3. It's okay.
You could be walking through the store, read instant reviews on projects. Kidding. I don't know if you guys are like me, but when I go into Best Buy and things and I'm looking at different electronics, I'm constantly on my phone, not only checking for price, but looking at reviews and things as well from other sites to be like, hey, is this thing really good? Is it going to do what I need? But instead of having to pull out my phone each time and type in the device and try to find the exact matching one and all of that, I could have that information. I think it's called Google Lens that automatically you can use that will detect what the product is, tell you and pull it up. So you could have a Google Lens-like technology there where as you're looking at these products, it's pulling up reviews, it's telling you the best price.
Couldn't you just do that with your phone and put the camera on the thing?
Yeah. Yeah.
So like...
Well, not for the Google, not for the glasses, but for Google Lens you do. Yeah.
Right, but I'm saying like in this sense would be the only thing this is doing is making it slightly more convenient to do things you already do.
Isn't that what life's about though? Isn't every electronic about making things slightly more convenient than what you had to do manually?
Definitely not. There's
I mean a database is slightly more convenient than a filing cabinet.
No, it's much more convenient than a filing cabinet. I mean, because after you get a certain amount, you can just add more space to the data space. Then otherwise, you got to buy another filing cabinet. It's a little bit of an improvement, a little more so. But I mean, there are some things in here, like the whole reading reviews, like as you're looking at it, I guess that's kind of cool because you can like just look at the product and it gives you the review. But it makes me wonder, like, how do you activate these things, right? So does it automatically like do it, or do you have to like tap it like the Google Glass or whatever? I would prefer that you have to activate it rather than just watching everything I'm seeing.
Yeah. I mean, you know? There's definitely privacy issues here abound, right? There's privacy issues with any of these glasses, the Ray-Ban ones, all of them. You know, they've tried to put lights on it to say so you could tell somebody's recording, but that doesn't really solve the issue necessarily. Number one, you have to see the light. And number two, your privacy is still invaded because they could just run off, right? Like, yeah, I recorded you, but what are you going to do about it? Never miss a moment snapping pictures or taking videos of special moments without having to dig in your pocket.
That part is good.
Yeah, you go to concerts nowadays, which I don't, but I watch them on TV sometimes or see a YouTube clip of a concert because who can afford the Ticketmaster costs? But if you see these concerts and things, everyone's just holding just up their phone. They're not even living in the moment and enjoying it because they're so concerned about letting their friends know that they're at the concert and recording videos that they're never going to watch again.
Yeah, that's the most important part of that sentence. Yeah. Like, you're recording something you will never look at. Like, what are you doing?
100%. You know, you can head to a party. This one is important to me because I have a problem with remembering people's names. It's always been like an issue.
I thought you just like partying.
that's never been said about me. So
earlier, you don't want to talk to you. You don't like vending. You want a vending machine because you don't want to deal with people. Right. And now you want to go to parties. So I feel like you're giving mixed signals.
Well, I want to go to a vending machine party where it's just vending machines. Me and vending machines and lots of coins.
This is an interesting story time with Ryan.
Yeah.
You can head to a party and never forget a name again. Imagine walking through scale and, you know, someone comes up to you and you're like, I already know that's Bob. Hey, Bob. Yeah. Hey, Sam. Hey, Joe. Hey, Sally.
You can pretend that you remember people's names. It's so good.
Yes. You could pretend you care about them. I like that. That's good. That's a good technology. Imagine business meetings and things.
That'd be really good for business. Yeah.
You know, you're in that interview room. You've got a panel interview with six people. Instead of sitting there trying to scribble all their names, it's just right there in front of you as you look at them. So the last thing which would really help me the most, let's be honest, is navigation. Map as you drive.
So you don't get lost.
Yeah. Augmented right on your windshield without the need to look to the right or left, device or screen. So
no, more importantly, the best thing about this would be for Ryan is to have like when you're like you're playing a video like a racing video game, they have like the path on the street on the road itself.
I need that.
This would like do that and put the like this is not only do you have the map, it's telling you exactly where to go on the road.
Video game like Quest where it just highlights an arrow. It's like turn stupid. Exactly. Turn. Yes.
Turn here. Also you're going too fast. Lower the color. You need to get this color.
So I think these are when you think about it, like a lot of these would be very convenient things to have on your face without having you dig for your phone. You could do all this with your phone, but it's a lot more difficult. Well, not all of it you could do with your phone, but a lot of this you could do with your phone, but it's a lot more difficult, requires a lot more effort. Or we could go with just the Pip-Boy style Fallout, you know, arm bracelet where your phone's just always on your wrist type of thing. We could go there. But I think this is where AR, augmented reality, would become very, very powerful. So the question is, based on what I've told you, Meta's releasing these at some point next year, I think, is the goal to have them to market, although they said it could come sooner. Would you buy a pair? Let's say if they're $300.
Okay, if they're $300, they're probably not going to be $300. But if they are, to play with, maybe. Because we could then make content on it, and then it'd be a write-off. And then so there, that's why I'm thinking about it. And like personal usage, probably not. Just because I don't feel like it's going to be $300, I think it's going to be like $2,500 probably.
Oof. Yeah. I don't know if it'd be that expensive. I mean, their MetaQuest isn't that expensive. But I guess
That's also because they bought someone else's company to bring in they bought the Oculus, which already existed, and then they made iterations of it, and then it was already cheap in comparison. So I think that's why they kept it to that
price.
Plus,
they made avatars with no legs, and they had to save tons of money.
Oh, yeah, exactly. That too. And they spent so much money on the metaverse that no one uses. I think that that's more likely the reason why, but also this is a whole new product and everything. So I feel like I'm not even sure if this is something I would want, because it would require, obviously, to get a prescription for it too. So like, how much extra do I have to pay for that?
How blind are you, Michael? Like, is your prescription really strong, or is
it's
like
pretty strong? It's pretty strong.
So yeah, you would have to have a prescription to effectively use them. You couldn't
get like by. For example, if I'm looking at you on the thing, and I can't see anymore.
Oh, like, wow. Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you would
I see a blur, like a big blur of a person.
Wow. All right.
So Jill, after about 10 inches, I can't see nothing.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on this? Is this something you want? You know, you own like 3,000 computers. Surely yeah. you have a pair of these two.
I would like one for my collection. Yes. Yeah. But this actually, honestly, would be a fantastic use of AI for visually challenged people.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. Especially oh, yeah. those that That's are completely point. Blind, and for helping them with directions and seeing obstacles, seeing in quotes, obstacles in front of them to avoid, and being That's able smart. To read signs and people around them in real time. So much freaking easier than using a cell phone. So
yeah, that's a good point. And also the speakers would be like telling them what to do.
Exactly.
It's like when you go to these cities and then you click the walk button and it starts saying walk, walk, like over and over and over. It'd yeah. be like that, except it's just only to them. And like that's a very good
point. It's a really good use yeah. case there, Jill.
Yeah. Like yeah. that. And unfortunately, though, for me personally, AR and VR glasses never work for me. In fact, they honestly hinder my ability to see, as I only use my right eye to see. So, so Michael has really horrible vision, and I have really horrible vision too. And I mean, actually,
we're not competing here, Jill.
No. Yeah, but you do, because I've looked at your.
I think
your
glasses, you'd win in that competition, but yeah.
Well, yeah. So my right eye moves around quite a bit and is often positioned looking at my nose, and the rims of the glasses, especially around my nose, are in the way of my vision because I only see with my right eye.
Oh, interesting.
So and I only see close up. I don't see distance. And
Now you could still utilize. I'm just thinking here that for your situation, Jill, maybe the audio cues, like you were talking yeah. about for
like
the
I
blind,
was
would be extremely beneficial there. If they put it in a different form factor, you wouldn't want it in front of
exactly.
your face, but maybe audio cue version of it.
Yeah. So I was thinking of a watch, like you have a smartwatch, except that this watch is for. Someone that needs help with directions and whatnot. If there's a way they could put that technology in a watch, because actually a lot of, for instance, a lot of blind people, they wear watches because, you know, it tells them the time. They get the speaking watches.
Yeah.
So if that had AI in it to help them with directions, that way, you know, they don't even have to wear something around their eyes or look at they're looking at their iPads if they're partial and or listening to their iPad. My best friend is completely blind, and she uses the iPad to navigate around the city. But she is like has a little bit of vision, so she's constantly like this on her iPad and will run into something. Which is the whole point of using it was to help prevent her from that happening.
Right. But it doesn't have cameras to see things
yeah,
around it
exactly.
and all that type of stuff.
And
right.
That's who this would be great for, to have something on your head that, you know, will help you prevent you from hitting obstacles and cars running into you.
Yeah. So
that's very interesting.
I think this has a lot of potential use cases. Jill, you probably added one of the most important ones in there that out there, but I could see a lot of people getting a lot of use out of this.
Yeah.
I wonder though, was your opinion change, Michael and Jill, on wearing these full time? Jill, obviously outside of, let's say they had an audio version of this, if it was Linux based. So if Meta said, hey, we're using, which they probably will use some type of open source as their OS base, because they typically do in Facebook, but let's say it's Ubuntu based. Would that change your opinion on utilizing this full time?
Well, it depends. It depends whether or not they're using Snaps.
Ah.
I'm kidding. I'm kidding. But it wouldn't really make that much difference because it's Meta. But at the same time, there's also some appreciation I have for Meta because their Llama AI is open source. Mm-hmm. They also have done a ton of work on ButterFS over many years. It's all open source. So they and they've also released like many different like database systems that they've made and things like that. So they have done a lot of things that are cool in the open source world. So like the maybe like as long as I don't have to deal with Facebook at all, then maybe. But I'd also want to like I'd need the whole thing open. Not the hardware. I don't need the schematics of how it's built and all that sort of stuff, but the software that's running on it, I need to be able to verify that the cameras are not watching everything I do. Because as someone who wears glasses, for those who are watching or not watching the show, but listening to the audio version, I have had glasses since I was in like third grade or something. I don't know. And I've had contacts in the past, but I typically just use glasses. And the last time I got a checkup on my eyes, they said that I can't use contacts anymore. So that's fun.
Oh,
yeah.
But
the most important thing is that literally everything I see, they would see. So I would need to be able to verify that the cameras on the glasses are not recording like my point of view of my existence. That would be super creepy. Yeah. So in that sense, it doesn't really matter if it's Meta or not. As long as I can verify that that's not happening, I'd probably be okay with it.
This is an area where Meta could do a lot of good work, probably with physical kill switches and things like that, that they could put in for the cameras, right? I think there's definitely big privacy concerns in schools and other areas where you've got devices constantly recording and things. So there's some problems they're going to have to overcome with this. But
I will say, I just want to say real quick, the idea of the point of view thing is scary, but also kind of awesome. If I could just have my entire day, I mean, go back and watch my entire day of that, of like how I was interacting with everything and just like watch as if it's like a point of view version of myself. It's kind of like
your avatar,
like Ready Player One sort of thing. Yeah. Like you're watching yourself go through it, or what, like a first person life thing.
Yeah. And you could upload it to YouTube and we call it the day of procrastination. Because you would just see Michael procrastinating day, so. On every task he's supposed to get.
It also might be a very boring video because of that. But, you know, you're right.
But I would definitely check these out and pick them up, because I think the amount of use cases of fun that you could have with these devices is unlimited. Like, I would be interested in wearing them to work, for instance, just for the ability while I'm coding to have it giving me hints and telling me where to fix and just being able to get that access right there on the glasses, I think would be fascinating. And there are other devices you can that pretend they're trying to come out
that
with.
It was all your idea while you're doing your coding.
Like they'll think I'm genius, right? And in an interview, right? If you're sitting in an interview, it could just feed you the answers to the interview questions, like the coding questions. And
stuff. It'd be like the Jawbone, maybe like possible where like there's no audible thing where you couldn't hear that you hear the answer and you just start repeating it like Cyrano de Bergerac.
Yes.
So MKBHD covered a recent video in YouTube, the worst device he's ever reviewed. But this little device was a pin device. It was like a little square that you put on your shirt, and it was actually well made. He said it was very well made, and it was AI built onto this little pin that, you know, as you're walking about through your day, it had a little camera on it. You could ask it questions. And it would answer the questions. What made it so terrible wasn't its build or even the fact that it was able to project menus and things onto your hand, which was really kind of cool. And it you'd use gestures so that you could go through the menus and things, but that it took so long to get you an answer back from the AI that it was practically worthless. So that was one of the big takeaways in there. So why that interests me and this article interests me is you could see there's a lot of people trying to find out, is there life beyond the phone, right? Is there something beyond the phone, that next gadget that we're all going to have on us that will make our lives, did the phone make our lives better or worse? I think that's up for debate.
You could argue both ways for sure.
Yeah.
But either way, I think that if it was obviously a lot of open source.
Unless you're listening to this podcast on your phone, then you did a fantastic thing. That's great. Good job, phones. Yeah.
You could watch our YouTube video on your glasses while you're at work.
Exactly.
Augment reality it right through.
Now we need to get them. Now it needs to happen.
I think it could be really cool. I'm interested to see how they're going to handle the privacy issues. I'm interested to see how they're going to handle the Facebook problem of Facebook having a reputation and trust issue. I think there's some things they could do there would be cool. But I would love to see a Linux and open source version of something like this. That would definitely be a buy for me if, I don't know, Framework came out with a pair of AR glasses. Like
that would be awesome.
That would be wonderful.
I would buy those, provided that the software is still open, because I do need the software open so I can verify that my entire life is not being recorded from my perspective. Very cool idea to have that if I want it, but also not someone else to have that. That's terrifying. But there is one thing I want to talk about, is that there seems to be some kind of collaboration between this, like people are reporting anyway, there's a collaboration between Meta and Ray-Ban. And I just wanted to talk about the fact that they talk about the slick design from Ray-Ban.
Yes.
And Ray-Bans are overrated. I don't think they're very good design, and they look exactly the same as they have for like 20 years.
What glasses and are you so fond of?
I mean,
you're so pompous.
I'm not fond of any sunglasses because of these. I don't have the ability to wear sunglasses, but those just look like little blocks that you can get. Like, they don't look super special. And I argue the only reason they have any relevance is because the Men in Black movies that existed, and they always wear those. But before those movies, no one cared about Ray-Bans. I think it's a marketing ploy that they did in those movies, which is very smart, but also they're still not that.
I think Ray-Bans are dope, you know?
You can be a shill of marketing if you want to. It's
what brand do you wear? What kind of glasses are you wearing right now?
Joseph Abond, of course.
Who is that? Joseph Bong?
No, Joseph. Hold on. I can't see very well with these off me. Joseph.
So they're not Oakleys?
Joseph Abound? I'm not sure.
Huh.
I don't know.
Is that good?
I have no idea. Okay. I just got them from the...
Jill, is that a fancy brand? I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, apparently you're fancy, Michael.
Of course I'm fancy. You know?
Speaking of a Ray-Ban...
I'm so fancy.
Maybe a little off the topic, but all the professional beach volleyball players wear Ray-Ban. And it's not just because they're sponsored, but they actually make glasses particularly for that sport. So they became really well known. That was one of the reasons why they became really well known.
See, Michael, you don't know nothing.
When I was a kid, I don't think that's why they got well known. I mean, it helped, sure, but I'm pretty sure that the Men in Black thing was like the biggest piece.
Oh,
but, because that was a big moment for you doesn't mean they were popular before.
I mean, it was a big moment for Will Smith, too. I'm just saying.
Right. Did he slap somebody? Did he slap the Ray-Bans off of someone?
I think there is a slap in that movie, actually. Yeah. Maybe we should I want someone to make a supercut of every movie where he slaps someone and like make it's the Will Smith slap. Anyway, my favorite part about this conversation is that Jill was like, this might be off topic. Like, Jill, I'm making fun of Ray-Bans. I think we've already gotten it.
We're way off topic.
This episode of Destination Linux is sponsored by Linbit. Linbit has been keeping digital businesses running for over 20 years. They're the makers of open source products like DRBD, which is high availability software that has been part of the Linux kernel since 2010, and LinStore, industry-leading open source software-defined storage. Linbit has an active presence in the open source community, and they collaborate with the community to help identify and build new features. Linbit provides enterprise-grade software that runs on a variety of platforms and OSs without vendor lock-in. What that means is that you could choose the software on any platform, including specific hardware that you want to use, or just off-the-shelf hardware that you get and connect it. All of this stuff can be interchanged really easily. And with DRBD and LinStore, you can have high-speed replicated block storage in almost any configuration, whether it's Kubernetes, Apache Cloud, or Open Nebula. There's even DRBD proxy for long-distance replication. Linbit is run by its founders to this day, and all of its engineers and developers are in-house with offices in Europe and North America, which allows them to have global 24/7 support to complement their enterprise offerings. Visit linbit.com to learn more about the people behind Linbit and the awesome software for block storage, duplication, and more.
Michael, tell us about the new pie, new flavored pie.
Well, it depends on how you want it baked. So if you want it baked with, I don't know where I'm going with that.
Oranges?
Or you could bake it with oranges, but you got to make sure you peel it correctly because it's a very tricky thing to peel an orange.
Pie, gross. Oh.
Or you can make it out of strawberries. Look at my strawberry shaped water mug.
Nice. No, now I love how we tried to get back on topic and then we immediately veered off again.
Jill's like, what strawberry water mug?
Yeah.
Oh, it is adorable. I will say I have just a bottle. Just a regular. Anyway, so we went off topic after like multiple tiers there. So let's get back on the road towards Destination Linux and talk about the Orange Pi 5. This is a single board computer, and it continues to evolve in this market space where all these different types of Pis and these SBCs are coming out, and they're even getting more and more powerful. And this is a fantastic example of that because Orange Pi has decided to take that to a whole other level. As you can even, like, for example, like in certain cases, you want to go from, you know, fast to faster to ludicrous speed. For those who know that reference, the Orange Pi 5 Pro has a 16 gigabyte RAM version. Yes, that's 16 gigabytes. And apparently the price is not even that ridiculous. So Ryan, let's talk about the specs and what the price is for this thing.
I mean, I think they threw everything in the kitchen sink at this SBC, and they've kept it under $200 at $127. That's for a 16 gigabyte. Now, they're also going to have a 4 and 8 gigabyte variant, which are going to be cheaper. But keep in mind, this is 16 gigabytes of LPDDR5 memory that they're putting in here. So that's a lot for a single board computer, like a lot.
And like a lot.
Like a lot, lot. And you get dual full-size HDMI ports, plenty of USB ports on this full size. You have an eMMC socket on this as well. So if you want to put, you know, an NVMe drive in there, you've got that option too. It's got an octa-core processor, you know, with all kinds of amazing cores and speeds in here. Yes, I mean, like I'm not going to go through all the specs.
A76 and the A55 and the whatever.
Yeah, exactly. It's not worth reading off, but just know it's a lot. It's an octa-core, right? You've got a lot of options there. And it's got, of course, a GPU, the ARM Mali G610 GPU in there. It's just kind of one of those situations. You also have your GPIO ports as well. So if you're using this for robotics or wanting to hook other sensors, electronics, other things to it, you've got that capability, just like a Raspberry Pi 5. And that's quite a bit of operating system support as well. And this is a problem that I've come across with things that aren't Raspberry Pi, is they don't have great operating system support a lot of times. It's kind of janky operating support, but they have Orange Pi OS. They have, which is Arch-based, which that automatically makes me kind of a big fan. Ubuntu, Debian, and Android 12 operating system support in this already that you can download there. So to me, this is a pretty exciting little device. It's just one of those things where the Raspberry Pi 5, you could do so much more from an operating system actually using it as a full computer than you could with prior Raspberry Pi iterations.
Mm-hmm.
But
this is the main reason I don't like ARM, specifically because they make their hardware incompatible with other ARM stuff. And they did this on purpose to make it as minimal as possible and to lower the footprint of the, you know, what hardware is needed and all that sort of stuff. Like, I get it, but at the same time, the whole reason why Android phones are so hard to get a separate operating system on it is because of this system. And this is why all these different SBCs are incompatible with different distributions, because they have to be made specifically for that hardware. And that is the only reason why I don't like ARM.
This is why we need RISC-V, right?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
John Mad Dog Paul said. Yeah.
Well, to me, one of the best new features of the Orange Pi 5 Pro is that it actually has an M.2 NVMe slot on the back and doesn't require a separate NVMe SSD hat like the Raspberry Pi 5 does. So it makes using cases a lot easier, because now you can use just a regular case. You don't have to get a case that has extra height. So there are advantages there. And the other cool thing is that the GPU is able through HDMI 2.1 utilize 8K at 60, which is incredible, actually, for a little SBC.
It really is. For $127, I mean, this is a great little system to buy for your kids for schoolwork or other things out there. You know, it's a pretty capable little machine.
And the 8 gig one that's going to come out is only going to be $80, and the 4 gig one only $60. So,
can't good go prices wrong. There. Yeah. Ultimately, I think this is a very solid machine, something great for hobbyists out there, whether you're doing robotics. There's a lot of AI type of applications you can do with these little little SBCs, and for kids to kind of cut their teeth on to get into all the education and cool STEM capabilities like Wendy does with robotics and things with her kids.
Mm-hmm. Cut their teeth on.
Well, not literally. Well, I guess you could literally, because it's got sharp pins.
If you bit
it,
it would hurt. Yeah.
Don't bite them.
Don't let your kids bite the SBCs.
If your kid's biting it, they're probably not ready for a single board. Give it another year. I know you want to push it quick, make sure your kid's going to turn out to be a proper geek, but
instead of doing that,
to be older than one.
Yeah, exactly. Instead of doing that, just give them story time with Ryan. And that
story time with Ryan. Yes, that's a great opportunity. But I still feel like Raspberry Pi is the standard in the industry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if you're going to only be able to buy one thing, one SBC, I would get a Raspberry Pi just because of the support,
the community
there, and the amount of projects.
Yeah. And all the add-ons are mostly made for the Raspberry Pi.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would still go there. But
also the Pi, thanks to the Raspberry Pi, the word Pi is now in a mainstream landscape. Like, people know what that is now, other than just nerds who are math fans,
But see, I would eat a Raspberry Pi, but I would not eat an orange pie, so I don't like their
name. I think it depends on the kind of, like, I think you can make an orange pie possible if you can make an orange cheesecake good.
It sounds disgusting, an orange pie.
I mean, you're being too judgy before you try it.
Is there such a thing as an orange pie?
Yeah, I've had an orange pie. I've had lemon too.
An orange.
I mean, pumpkin pie is delicious. So why wouldn't orange pie be good?
I don't know. It just doesn't. I've never seen one. I don't even think it exists.
Oh, but raspberry pie is my favorite.
Ooh, there's a no-bake orange creamsicle pie. Orange creamsicle would be good.
Oh, that sounds interesting.
You could keep your name orange pie for now.
Yeah, for now it's okay.
Yeah,
I'm curious. We need to have somebody on from Raspberry Pi so we can ask them the very important question that everybody's wondering. Why the flavor or fruit raspberry? Why did you choose that? It could have been anything else. Why that one? And then that's the only question we would ask them, because it's the only
could have been the apple pie. Yeah. Could have been
It could have been the apple pie is probably because of the Apple company. They probably
would have. Oh, yeah.
No. Trademark infringement. No.
Blueberry and then, pie.
But blueberry. Blackberry, that also is another reason that you probably wouldn't eat blackberry, but blueberry, I wonder.
Pumpkin pie. Pumpkin. Cute. Oh, I got my little pumpkin, It would have been cute.
Yeah. I think the world needs to know. We need to get them on.
Yeah, we'll figure it out.
I think because raspberries are looked at as quite special, they're a little more expensive than the other fruits.
Oh,
so
all right.
Maybe.
Look at Jill.
But the raspberry pie was started off as like this, super cheap thing. So maybe...
Oh, that's true.
Maybe it's like this. It's like this. Kind of like subliminal message that they're doing. Like,
I think we're overthinking this. Oh, Jill, take us into.
It's one of the most loved flavors. That's for sure. Raspberry for raspberry candy. I mean, raspberry pie.
It's very rare that you'd find something raspberry that you don't like. And you're right, Ryan. We are going into another tangent. So, Jill, let's
get to the gaming.
Speaking of story time with Ryan. Have you ever dreamed of working a virtual job after you're done actually working your real life job?
And all the time.
Ryan wrote that.
You ever dreamed? I wrote it when it starts with, have you ever dreamed of getting off this planet? Have you ever dreamed of working
going
a job?
Going to space? Have you ever dreamed? Ryan writes it.
Instead of going to space, this is going to another workspace.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, Jill, to answer your question, I would love to have another job outside of my real life job. Like, that's my dream. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So, you have Destination Linux.
That's true. I want another job on top of that.
Yeah.
Well, you're in luck, Ryan.
So many of us share your same dream, Ryan. That's why our game this week is Urban Entrepreneur. And in this game, you can pretend to work even more. The game describes itself like this. Urban Entrepreneur is a captivating simulation and strategy game that puts players in the role of an ambitious business manager ready to build a thriving empire in a bustling, ever-changing city. With a focus on players who enjoy simulation and strategy games, this modern game targets both casual and hardcore gamers, catering to young adults and adults interested in business and entrepreneurship. So if sim games are your thing, this one is already receiving lots of positive reviews and is available on Linux. And this fun game called Urban Entrepreneur starts off, actually, it's really funny. It starts off by letting you run a store in a local shopping center that is owned by your father. And the whole point is to make your dad proud of you and show him that you can make more money by attracting customers and selling high-quality products, have great customer service, and that you're truly a thriving entrepreneur. It is available to download for 40% off at $5.99 till April 25th on Steam. And there is a demo so you can play and test it out as well.
I enjoyed it. When you go and check it and you see that it's pixels, it's a pixelated game. That might be a good thing or a bad thing for you. Depends on what you're thinking. Also, there's the part in the how it describes itself part was funny because it says an ever-changing city. That sounds terrifying if the city itself is changing all the time. You know?
Well, I like this idea, but I think they should add some additional elements to it. What if instead of making my dad proud, I open a similar shop across from my dad, undercut him, steal his business, and create a bigger empire? Like, I think there's some other like story arcs we could do with this here.
Absolutely, yes. Ryan. And also where you could like, and also another mode where you can just be the lazy son and not do anything at all.
Your dad does all the work.
Yeah, exactly. And then you just get like, how many disappointment levels can you get?
I mean, it's a sim, so like you should be able to be. You could be an ant. They're sim ant. So why can't I be sim Michael, where I just procrastinate?
That is not at all. I knew you were going to go with that, but that's not at all what I did.
Yeah, sim Michael. That would be a fun game. Maybe they'll create it. Nah, they listen to this. Actually, this looks pretty cool. These sim games are games fun. Where you're like, why would this be fun? Like sim ant was that way for me. Like, why would I want to be an ant? And then
that was one of my favorite ones, actually.
Loving playing Sim Ant, like dodging lawnmowers and sneaking in the houses is a blast, man. I loved it.
I have never heard of that, and that should be that should be next week's
Sim Ant. All right, we'll cover Sim Ant for you. That's a hot game.
Do you remember the Magic 8 Ball toys as a kid?
The toys.
The one
I thought they were legit. Are you kidding? Oh my goodness.
The one where you would ask a question, shake it up, and get an answer back.
Yes.
Well, now you can make decisions without carrying around the giant black magical ball. Finally. Thanks to our app Predictor. Predictor describes itself like this. It's a program for predicting the outcome of events. It works like a magic ball. The user asks a question and presses a button, and the program outputs some randomly selected phrase. Like you could ask, are we going to have a dad joke today by Michael?
Ooh, let me check. Hold on. Let me click. Ask it. I have it up right here, and it says, wow, this takes way too long, Magic 8 Ball. It said nah. It just said nah, N-A-W, nah. We're not getting another. Oh,
so it even knows I'm Southern.
Yeah. It said nah.
Or it could be, it wants you to have a dad joke this episode, but knew it wasn't the greatest.
Yeah, that's what it was.
Wow.
Dang.
Metaverse was fantastic, Jill. How
dare you? Magic Predictor, let me shake it on my screen here. Is Jill Savage? Let me ask it. It's coming. Wait for it. It's shaking. And concentrate and ask again. It won't even put down Jill. You see that Magic 8 Ball?
Yeah, you can't ask Predictor to be mad at Jill. You know. Yeah.
Okay. Aw, so
I like how it's also trolling you, telling you need to concentrate.
I need to concentrate on the magic here. Yeah.
So, is this application just magic or just fluff? Well, you won't know unless you give it a try and see if the predictions actually come true. And we do not recommend using this magical program for any serious decisions, but might be something fun to play around with at a party and with your friends.
Yeah, forget that. I recommend you use it for all your serious decisions and then write in and let us know how it went.
Yeah.
Because that would be hilarious. Also,
let's check it now and say, will Ryan use these for terrible decisions that he should not use? Click. Outcome unclear. Okay.
Right, see? You never know.
We don't know.
I did ask it while we were away of, is Wendy savage? That was the first question that I asked it. And it said 404 answer not found. So we did
Jill. It's terrified.
Yeah. It's terrified of Jill and Wendy. So it will not answer those questions. So its magic has limits, clearly.
Yeah. Hey, the magic eight ball is our original AI. So, you know, and sometimes AI is not as right as the magic eight ball.
Honestly, this is probably more accurate than a lot of the AI out there. Yeah.
Depending on your, it's very common. Like, you could say, like, it probably is more accurate just on random luck. Yeah.
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 AI hallucinates a lot. But I feel like you could probably do a lot of good stock picks for this and other things like that. Will Destination Linux ever go IPO? I mean, that would be a good question there.
Yeah, Touch Digital. You should ask them right now. Do it.
Yeah, let's see. It's coming back to us. Very doubtful, it said. This thing is as good as AI. I'm telling you. Yeah.
Every question so far has been a pretty good answer. Yeah. All right. But, you know, let's move on to the tip of the week, because this week we're going to tell you about not using magical eight balls as a way to make decisions or predicting software in this case, because that's not necessarily the best way to do it. But on top of that, you're going to have another tip. It's a bonus tip. Ooh. If you want to get educated on AI and all the possibilities this will unlock or, you know, make up because AI, check out NVIDIA's free AI courses, because these are actually pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Because you we'll have a link in the show notes to get to the more details about this. But you can basically go to a series where it's a self-paced series of courses where, and also they're free, as I mentioned, that you can check out that will be able to help you get like a generative AI explained, building RAG agents with LLM, augment your LLM using retrieval augmented generation, and in many more, including one that I'm suggesting to them, explain the initialisms and the acronyms of all the things that you're saying. And that would be a good one.
Maybe that's like in the generative AI explained course there.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I'm actually certified in one of these courses. NVIDIA does a really good job of releasing some of their free courses out there. But one of them you can do, it's not free because you have to buy a Nano Jetson, which is their single board computer that's made for like AI usage and things. And if you complete their course, you get a certification, which is kind of nice. And it teaches you a lot about AI. And some of the work many months ago that I remember doing with it was being able to use this board to detect faces, do facial recognition, also detecting the different color of traffic lights and things like that to know if it's red, green, and be able to kick off different actions depending on that type of stuff. So they have some very cool courses out there. So definitely check them out. And they're free, so you can't beat that.
Yeah. And also NVIDIA is doing like a lot of cool stuff with AI. So, I mean,
yeah, they're kind of the leader right now. Yeah. $2 trillion worth of leading there. Evaluation, anyways. Speaking of $2 trillion, most people would say they would spend $2 trillion just to see us at Red Hat Summit May 6th through the 9th in Denver, Colorado.
That has been confirmed by basically everyone we've ever talked to. That's the first thing that people say to us when they see us. I spent $2 trillion to come see you. That is what happens.
So stupid. I spent $2 trillion to come see you. Oh, Michael and
it sounds like we made it up or something. No, we wouldn't do that.
The good news is the tickets to Red Hat Summit are not $2 trillion. They're actually way more reasonable than that. So,
I mean, they're still kind of high, but they are more reasonable.
Yeah. So May 6th through the 9th in Denver, Colorado, Michael and I will be there at the Red Hat Summit and Ansible Fest, where they're bringing together IT professionals, customers, partners, peers, tools. They're providing tools. They're going to have all kinds of hands-on stuff, knowledge.
The puppy petting place, like puppy that's going to be awesome.
Yeah, I mean, that's cool.
Pretty awesome.
Yeah, the oxygen thing that they're doing. You know, it's also really cool is that if you work for a company that might want, that's like considering going to Red Hat Summit, they actually have a document to help you explain the value of going to the Red Hat Summit that you can send to your managers and stuff. So I thought that was actually kind of clever.
You could tell them you could see the $2 trillion worth of Destination Linux podcasters there. Two of the $1 trillion podcasters if you go to
Okay, Red Hat. So is the show 2 trillion or is each one individual of us 2 trillion? Or
each of us is 1 trillion. It would be 3 trillion if Jill was joining, but it's 2 trillion because so I'm a trillion, you're a trillion. Well, Jill's probably 2 trillion. It'd be 4
by
trillion.
By herself, it'd be 4 trillion. Yeah, true. Yeah. That's true.
Yeah, she's worth a little more than us. I mean, if it was a hostage situation, people would pay more to release Jill.
I mean, you should rephrase that. If there was a hostage situation, they would pay to release Jill.
That's it. The rest of us would be stuck. Yeah. All right. Well, this show has gone off topic multiple times, but that's the fun of this show. And we hope you enjoyed it. And we thank each and every one of you for supporting us by watching or listening to Destination Linux. However you do it, we love your faces. And you can come join us on our Discord. Go to tuxdigital.com/discord. We got all kinds of cool rooms there. You want to talk about Linux, it's there. You want to talk about gaming, it's there. Movies, fitness, all that stuff is there on our Discord channel. And the good news is if you don't like meeting new people, maybe it causes you fear because you're not sure what to say. Well, in the Discord channel, it's really easy because you have something in common with every single person there. You love this show, or maybe you just love Jill, but either way, you got something in common with them. So there you go. tuxdigital.com/discord.
And you can talk to my Steve husband in the memes channel. He's often in there.
That's where Steve hangs out, is in the memes.
Yeah.
Memes.
Love it. Nice. And also, if you can go check out our Discord server where we have patron-only access, where if you become a patron, you get special access to our patron-only section of the Discord server and many more things. Because, for example, would you like to watch this show live?
I would.
I mean, I'm not sure why. The chaos maybe is like the
well, why wouldn't I? I'd love to watch this show live. That'd be awesome.
I mean, you're doing the show, so I would assume that you're already watching it in a way because you have the screens that are showing.
It'd be cool not to have to participate and just watch, you know.
Oh, that would be nice. Yeah. All right, Jill, take it over. Just do it the whole show.
Okay. So you can go.
Go, Jill. Do it. You do it better. Go.
And watching live is just one of the awesome perks you get when you become a patron. We have the patron-only post show that happens every week after the show. Go to tuxdigital.com membership to sign up.
That was nice.
You can go to the tuxdigital.com/store, which Michael's going to tell you about it because he just made a new website for it. And it's really cool.
Nice. So
I was hoping she would just finish the whole show out because
that'd be funny. But it is true that she it makes sense she should pass it back to me because I did. The whole store that we were talking about, how there's gonna be a whole new store and there's gonna be
for 6 months. Yeah.
Okay. It wasn't that long. It was long, but it wasn't that long. Yeah. But it's now arrived. You can go to tuxdigital.com/store and there's basically it's a nice consolidated thing because I went and saw how much the Redbubble like stuff was there. There were so many things that were just unnecessary. One of the products, like one of the designs, I think the pseudo show had like 82 items, and I was like, what is happening with this Redbubble thing? Anyway, so we've consolidated it down. All the best stuff and some new stuff is there, and also more stuff is coming. So go to tuxdigital.com/store, bookmark it, and you're going to get a lot more cool stuff to come very soon. We're even doing something where we're going to do collections of only time sensitive type things, like where it's only available for a certain amount of time. And once that's over, there's no longer available and that particular thing is gone. So it's like a special edition type of stuff.
Wait, let me ask Predictor, should I go to the store and buy one of everything right now?
I feel like
now.
It's going to troll us right now. Go ahead.
It said Outlook not so good. All right, but buy one thing is what it meant. Don't buy one of everything. Buy one thing. Why is it always so negative? Predictor. Yeah. Wow, very negative.
Come on, Predictor.
Yeah, stupid Predictor.
And also make sure to check out all the amazing shows here on Tech Digital. That's right. We have a whole network of shows to fill your awesome entire week with geeky goodness. Check out Michael's This Week in Linux for your source for Linux Weekly News, which is a weekly video podcast that he hosts that takes you through all the happenings of Linux and open source each and every week. And everyone head to tuxedo.com and subscribe to all our great shows. And don't forget to leave a rating on your favorite app so others can discover the power of open source. Click 5 stars if there's 5 stars.
Yes. Please. Exactly, and, Jill.
And keep those penguins marching in the full Monty of Linux and open source awesome sauce.
Everybody.
Everybody.
Everybody and everybody. That's everyone.
You covered everybody. You've covered everybody now. I love how we've literally had this as the end of the show.
There is, bro. It's not even there.
It's not there.
I'm going off of memory. So.
It's there, but it's also been there. But memory should have also been fine because we've done it hundreds of times.
I just pronounced it everybody. Everybody.
Everybody.
Listen, everybody. Everybody, have a great week. And remember, the journey itself is just as important as the destination.
The destination. I'm sorry, Ryzen.
Should I redo that predictor or leave it like it is? Let's see here.
Let's see what predictor says.
That looked good.
Leave it.
Hey, something positive. Yay. Let's just keep it.
Thanks, everyone.
The best part about it is that the only positive thing was to keep the mess up of everybody.
Yeah. Okay. I believe in this thing's magic, though, you know?
We also said that you got to use it for all your important decisions, so we're going to keep it in there.
Yeah. All right. There you go. It's done. Thanks, everyone.
I'll see you next week.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, everybody.